Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Hey.
Yeah, I know. Get a little sign there, huh? 425. Yes, thank you for the reminder. Yeah, that's 425, as I've said many times. Anything with a 0 and a 5, we love. Yeah, episode 425. We should maybe give a little extra effort today. What do you say?
It's not to say that we don't give 100% every podcast. My goodness gracious. I know I'm doing it. I mean, I don't know about on your end over there, Reg. I mean, you know. Every so often, it seems like you're slacking. I'm just joking. All right, you got that trigger
finger ready?
Good. I will give you the countdown. Or I will give you the three S's, and then I will give you the countdown. You give me the music, and I will give you podcast number 425. So put it in the book. You ready to go? All right. Star, smile, strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Also, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and also give it a rating. But the best rating you can give it is your very own endorsement. So get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And why the heck isn't it theirs if it isn't already? Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Of course, if you like what you hear, you can always go to WGNradio.com, go to the podcast section of the website, click on the prompt for this podcast, and then be prepared to be delighted and entertained and informed and enlightened with scores and scores of podcasts just waiting for you to enjoy for the first time or for the 10th time. They go way back, so just keep scrolling down and loading more, scrolling down and loading more. You've been doing this for more than 8 years, and this is episode number 425. Yes, 425. Oh, I don't know if that's anything to celebrate, but as I've often said, we love to celebrate things with zeros and fives. So here we are yet at another 5 milestone, 425. Can you imagine that? 75 away from 500. All right. Get your calculators out. I was good in math up until Algebra 2 trig. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. I was good until algebra. Geometry blew my mind because I guess it's a lot about logic. And if you listen to this podcast, maybe sometimes logic isn't always around. No, I wouldn't say that. But yeah, geometry blew my mind completely. I just never understood the concepts. I just didn't get it. I still don't really understand what's going on there. These theorems and it was just too esoteric for me. I did come back and rebounded, if you will, in Algebra 2 trig, at least understanding the concept. But then it started to get too advanced from my, not so much my brain perhaps, but just my interest. I wasn't seeing the value of this, at least from my standpoint. And when I look at the rest of my life since then, I have had very little use for algebra 2 trig. I was always interested in the arts and writing and communication and things like that. And so that's the path I chose. And I have noticed that in the last, since I've graduated high school, 40, how many years ago already, I can honestly say that I don't think I've had any use or any practical need for algebra 2 trig or geometry or anything past that. Nothing against it. Certainly, in today's computer world, if you have that acumen and that interest and that ability, it's certainly, I'm sure, has served you and will continue to serve you well. If you're a programmer or things like that, you understand all the mathematical, theorems and algorithms. I do remember in high school hearing that word algorithm. That's one thing I do have. I have very good reading comprehension. Once again, always about language and communication. Always scored very well in those generalized tests in reading comprehension, which has certainly come in handy for me in my career over the years as being a writer and reporter and even talking on the radio and doing other things and certainly in my acting career in terms of having a memory, remembering what I've read and trying to explain it. I mean, that's basically what a reporter does, and that was my first entree into the media world. So, you always tend to go where your strengths are, I would hope. But I do remember hearing the word algorithm somewhere in math class in high school. Maybe it was in algebra or algebra 2 trig. But I do remember hearing the word algorithm. And then, of course, like everything else that I was exposed to in those math classes, as I said, as soon as they were finished, they quickly left my brain forever until the mid-90s, when then all of a sudden we had a much deeper interest and exposure to the computer world and its workings because of the internet. And working, as I did during that time, in the technology public relations world, I had to know a lot of this information. Now, once again, I didn't have to understand it necessarily all that well. I had to have a certain grasp of it. I didn't need to know the nuts and bolts of which, as I said, I didn't really need algebra 2 trig in my life. However, I did, I believe, to this point, I did benefit from having some exposure to that later, in that I understood the overall kind of concepts of things. And then I remember in doing my research and getting a little more, immersed and knowledgeable about the tech world and what was going on in the development of the internet. And of course, then the apps, I started to hear this word algorithm. And I remember it snapped. I went, wait a minute, algorithm. I remember that in algebra 2 trig or something. Yeah. Wow. So I shouldn't actually have made that blanket statement a little earlier in this podcast to say that I had no use for it, because that's not true. As I said, it totally blew my mind. I couldn't explain how an algorithm works or anything like that, but at least I was exposed to it somehow. At least I knew the word. So when I had a sense of what an algorithm did because of that exposure back in high school. So, to be honest, wow, I just had a revelation. I have to rethink my entire high school education now. Now, I have to say that, yes, I did use some of the knowledge and some of the exposure that I got in Algebra 2 trig. Thank you. Yes, it wasn't a waste of junior year. But I do remember hearing that word algorithm and going, oh, wait a minute. I remember that in high school and having a general idea of what it was and then learning a little more of it because now you hear the word algorithm all the time. A major word and a major part of our daily use and lexicon because of our dependence on the smartphone and computers. And everybody uses it. And there's it used to be, I'm sure, a term that was relegated to the engineering world or the high mathematician world. But now it is definitely a mainstream pop culture world. Algorithms. We all know that algorithms are the things that determine and dictate many of the prompts that we get on a regular basis when we go online based on our previous behavior or our previous searches and things like that, or whatever knowledge is out there about our likes and dislikes. These algorithms are programmed to pick up on what our likes are and send us information of all kinds, mostly marketing things, hint, hint, about what we may be interested in not only reading about, but more importantly, what we might be interested in buying. Ah, and here I was in Algebra 2 trig back at St. Patrick High School in Chicago, thinking that I would never use anything that I was learning in Algebra 2 trig. What am I going to use this for? How short-sighted was I? 15 or 20 years later, Algebra 2 trig is now embedded in everything we do every day, even though we don't even know about it. But that is not what I want to talk about today. That is, I'm looking at my script here, as I say, this show and this podcast always very well scripted, as you can tell. And as I look at page 10, there was, you know, the original script being about 12 minutes or so into this. There is no mention at all on this script about talking about Algebra 2 trig or algorithms. Not there at all. But so let me see now. I always joke about that when I go off on a little tangent or I digress away from my main topic, that I always find a way to circle back, and that that even though it may seem very indiscriminate as to what I'm talking about and just kind of throwing a bunch of unconnected topics at you, that in fact there is some overall theme. So now, well, I have to admit that I did not expect the algorithm chunk in this discussion at all when I was thinking about the topic I want to talk about. Let me think if I can at least get some dotted line to algorithms and Algebra 2 trig and preparing for things. There it is. Preparing for things. In the future, little did I know when I was a junior in high school and when I was studying Algebra 2 trig, I don't know how much I was studying, but while I was at least being taught it, that I would at least, honestly, come on, you know, what am I, you know, 17 years old, knowing that I was not going to pursue an engineering or math related career, I certainly thought that I would have no use for any of this. I would have to say that still was kind of true about 98% of it. But as I said, the algorithm thing, I do remember, and we are using it. So the idea of preparedness for the future, maybe I could use that as a dotted line to what I really want to talk about. So here we are in the middle of July. Literally, in the middle of July, as this podcast posts this week, will be the Republican National Convention at which The Republican Party will officially designate its presidential nominee for the 2024 presidential election on November 5th. And then just about a month from today, right now, at least around this week in August, right here in Chicago, we will have the Democratic convention starting on August 19th and going to the 22nd. And that's what I want to talk about. Not about the convention, not about the politics. I talked about politics last week to some extent. It was more about health. It was more about care and compassion and recognizing when someone was in trouble, especially with a mental decline and a mental disease. It's not easy for us to accept those. When we hear about severe diseases or terminal diseases, those we somehow can get our hands around. But when it comes to emotional diseases, whether it's any kind of mental disease, even something like schizophrenia or bipolar, things like that, but certainly Alzheimer's or dementia is still relatively new in our culture. We will, as time goes on, have much more information and understanding about it, I believe, in the next 20 years, just because more people are living longer and it's becoming more of an issue. 50 or 60 years ago, people weren't living this long. It seems as if mental decline of somehow dementia or Alzheimer's is almost a natural aging process for a good number of people and a good number of human beings. But it's just that 50 or 60 or 70 or 80 years ago, people weren't living as long in these big of numbers. So yes, there were some people that, and we always heard about someone's going senile, which is, I guess, another word for dementia. It was kind of a brutal word, but you know, 50, 60 years ago, people's compassionate feelings, we used really kind of rude, mean words. We are a kinder, gentler society in some ways. Not always, don't get me wrong. But at least in the way we try to treat each other, we've tried to move. I mean, there were some terms that you can't even use today. Their jaws would drop, and they were common uses even 15, 20, 30 years ago. But yeah, senile was one of the ones that we now know was probably dementia or Alzheimer's, but it wasn't understood, it wasn't in big numbers, and so we didn't really pay attention. But now, and even in my case, as I said, almost 20 years ago, even then, we didn't have an exposure to it. A lot of people didn't have an exposure to it, didn't understand it, and so there was a lot of misinformation and misunderstanding. Just like there was during the AIDS epidemic 40 years ago. Same kind of prejudices, same kind of ignorance, same kind of misinformation, misunderstanding. As more and more people now live longer, more and more people will be exposed to either themselves or others, loved ones, family members, friends, who have it, who will get it. And so then we will have a better understanding and it won't have a stigma that it still has today. And the stigma is not having the disease. The stigma is recognizing the disease. But that was last week. Like I said, I'm not talking about politics now, but I am talking about the Democratic convention that's coming to Chicago next month for a simple reason about preparedness. And I always talk about facing reality. And this is another aspect of this that I think is important. Just like last week when I talked about this, instead of being in denial about President Biden's condition, I think we need to look at this from a reality standpoint and treat this man as a sick man. I mean, Michael Moore, and I was, to be honest, I was actually flirting with this term when I was going to record my podcast last week. And Michael Moore, the filmmaker, did use it. And it got a lot of attention on a podcast. Now, certainly if I would have used it, nobody would have reacted because nobody really knows who the hell I am and who cares. But Michael Moore used it. But I was thinking of the fact of Joe Biden being in this most important position in the world. And the denial that so many around him, his family, his advisors, his friends, it's almost to put him in that situation. The Democratic Party, as I said last week, don't blame Joe Biden. Don't blame anybody. I would blame the Democratic Party. It is almost elder abuse. And that might seem strong, but it's true. To put somebody in a position that they shouldn't be in anymore, that they just can't handle, whether they want to or not. I mean, what's going on with Joe Biden right now is he's an elderly man with diminished mental capacity who won't give up the keys to the car. And I think a lot of people can relate to that situation. We all can't relate to a president not giving up a candidate giving up running for president. But there might be more and more people who've had to deal with a relative who doesn't want to give up the keys to the car, who thinks they could still drive and yet they could injure themselves and others because of their mental incapacity. But once again, that was last week. But I'm talking about preparedness. I'm talking about realism. And I have lived in the Chicago area my entire life, born and raised in Chicago proper. While I don't live in Chicago, I'm literally right across the street from Chicago. So, I mean, I still consider myself a Chicagoan. I've lived here all my life, traveled around the world, no question about it, have been tempted to move many times, but have not. I think Chicago is making a big mistake. Has made a big mistake, and I hope the city doesn't suffer too much from it. I don't want my fears and my semi-predictions to come true, but I think it's important to at least talk about the warning signs of it so that if this does turn out to be a mistake, we don't make it again. So, next month, the Democratic National Convention comes to Chicago, which means that there is going to be not only national attention, but international attention, global attention, aimed right at Chicago. Delegates, politicians from all over the country will be descending on Chicago. Media from all over the country and all over the world will be descending on Chicago, especially now more than ever, given what's happened in the presidential campaign. Now more than ever, internationally, the United States presidential election is much more crucial and important and on people's mind around the world. The United States has a huge, huge influence of what happens in this globe, given its standing as the most powerful and richest country in the world. But still, I'm sure many people around the world still look at the United States with a little apathy. They certainly come knocking on our door when they need some financial help or military help. But that's what happens when you're the big kahuna. You got to take the good with the bad. But now, given what is happening in the presidential election, the uncertainty of this around Joe Biden's candidacy, the world will be watching to see what exactly the Democrats do, because what they do will have a direct influence on the winner of the next campaign. No question about that. Can Joe Biden not only remain the nominee, but can he win against Donald Trump, given all that's happened in the last 2 or 3 weeks? So huge, huge decisions to be made, huge, huge results and aftermaths from those decisions that will be made. But a decision was made a couple of years ago, before all this, which I think is a little more localized, that we here, at least in the Chicago area, or any city around the world, should think about. Because I can even put this on the same thing that's going on in the next couple of weeks in Paris, who will be hosting the 2024 Summer Olympics. Chicago right now, I said, I was raised, born and raised here. Consider myself a Chicagoan. Have great affection for the city. Haven't moved here. Haven't moved away. Stayed here my entire life. So I feel that I have the right to be a little honest. You know, you always hurt the one you love, right? I'm not trying to hurt you. I'm just trying to tell the truth. Be realistic. Over the last several years, Chicago's reputation, sadly, has fallen because of the serious crime problem. For many years, the crime problem or the gang problem had been isolated in a couple of different neighborhoods. It wasn't a citywide problem. It was, in many cases, some cases, it was in certain neighborhoods in just a one or two block area because of the gang problems. But you can't say that anymore. The crime rate in Chicago has risen. And even though the police will give you different statistics that show that it's on the decrease, and well, okay, it's on the decrease because the number was so high, even it's decreased, the decreased number is still way above what it should be. You know, you can spin numbers any way you want. Perhaps crime has decreased, but it rose to such a level that even the decreased number is much higher than it should be. So let's, once again, let's be realistic and honest about the numbers. And not only is the crime, have the crime statistics risen, but the crime environment has spread. We are now seeing crime in Chicago hitting more neighborhoods, not just a couple of dangerous neighborhoods where gangs are the most prolific, but it's creeping out. We've laxed our laws and our punishments for certain crimes, and that has allowed certain crimes to go up. And here in Chicago, we are known now nationally, if not internationally, for our crime. It's not fair, because there's a lot of other good things that go on in Chicago, but it is not unfair either. That's the reality. And the crime rate has risen, and because of Chicago's prominence in the country, third largest city, it now is used as a regular example of big cities in decline and big cities with major crime problems. Now, that's not good for tourism, is it? It's not good for business or investment. It is not good for anything. This has been slowly creeping up, but now it is at a danger level. Chicago has a major image problem. And so a couple of years ago, in an effort to shift that image problem with business and politics and tourism, the two major leaders in the Chicago area and the state, Governor Pritzker and at the time Mayor Lightfoot, decided that they wanted to put Chicago up as a contender to host the 2024 Democratic Convention. To hope to try to shift this growing image problem to put the city on display and to show that while, yes, there are some problems and crime, but look at what a great city it is. We'll have these beautiful shots of downtown Chicago at night, the skyline, the lake, and it'll be a great promotional tour or promotional tool for the city on a national and international basis to show people that while you're hearing so many bad stories coming out of Chicago about the crime, it is a beautiful city. It is a fun city. It is a rich city. It is a diverse city. And it is not on decline. It is on the way back. That is the impetus for why do we get the Democratic convention. They want to bring as many people in to enjoy the city, to see the city, and they really want the international and national media here to highlight the city. And basically, it's one big image campaign, image-enhancing campaign. And Chicago gets to be the center of the universe for about 4 days. And that's basically what it is, especially now, given the controversy swirling about the Democratic nominee. This was, in fact, the funny thing is that both conventions were going to be kind of ho-hum because there wasn't really any competition in the presidential primaries. And so it's a foregone conclusion. It was that Donald Trump would be the Republican nominee and President Biden would be the Democratic nominee. And it was just rubber stamped. There wasn't going to be any mystery, any brokered conventions or any, backroom intrigue. It was pretty much going to be a 3 or 4 day commercial for each party. But all that's changed. And even if Joe Biden stays in the race, and once again, while I'm recording this, Joe Biden is still in the race. That could change any day between now and August 19th. As I record this, he's still in the race. But even if he stays in the race and there's not all the chaos of finding a new candidate and all those other paths that may happen if he did drop out, which would certainly make the convention much more interesting and intriguing and a real news-making event as opposed to a rubber-stamped event, as opposed to just some, marketing campaign for the Democratic Party and for Joe Biden, which most of the conventions over the last several years have become. But one way or the other, regardless, the national and international spotlight is going to be on Chicago for those 4 days, August 19th to August 22nd. And as I said, a couple of years ago, Governor Pritzker and Mayor Lightfoot got together and said, this might be a good vehicle for Chicago to put its best foot forward amidst all this bad news that keeps coming about the state, that the state is in financial trouble, Illinois, and the city is a crime capital of the country. We need to shift that narrative. And so they said, hey, well, there's nothing better than a Democratic, a presidential convention. They used to be in Chicago. If you look back in history, presidential conventions were held in Chicago all the time. Chicago was a regular place because it was centrally located. So it was easy for all the delegates to get here at that time from trains and later with airplanes. They had the big facilities, Chicago Amphitheater, the Chicago Stadium. They had big venues for it. And once again, being the transportation hub and being in the middle of the country, it was a natural place to have it. And so Chicago has been the home of many, many presidential conventions. Now, over the last almost 60 years, it hasn't, because of all the chaos and turmoil and controversy from 1968. Ever since then, Chicago has been very few and far between. Because of the footage that still remains of the Chicago police and the protesters and the violence that took place during that very chaotic convention. And the irony now is that there's a possibility for that same kind of chaos to happen here once again in Chicago, presidential campaign and presidential convention in Chicago. The potential for that kind of chaos and sadly even that kind of violence is possible. Not because of necessarily the Joe Biden situation and the political intrigue that will surround that now. It already heightens interest in the Democratic convention one way or the other. Certainly if Biden drops out, it makes this convention the most newsmaking, interesting convention, perhaps in the last 100 years. If Joe Biden remains a candidate, that intrigue goes away to some extent, but there's still going to be a lot of attention because Joe Biden's going to have to show up and give us an acceptance speech, and he'll have to perform, and they'll have to see how does he look. So there's no question. A week, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, the Democratic convention was kind of a footnote nationally. It was just kind of looked like a 4-day little party for Democrats. One way or the other, whatever happens in Joe Biden's candidacy, the spotlight is going to be on the Democratic convention. And then it's going to be on where it's held, in Chicago. Given Chicago's history, and we should say that that Chicago hosted a presidential convention in 1996 when Bill Clinton was renominated for his second term, which he won, and the city put on a hell of a show. No incidents, no protests, no violence. The city cleaned up its act, pretty much made a huge urban renewal in the area around the United Center, where the convention was held. And today, that neighborhood and the surrounding neighborhoods on the west side around the United Center, the areas are completely regentrified. And that was a direct result of some of the initial work that was done to provide safety around the area, because it was a high crime area, as well as putting your best foot forward, making the city look shiny and new when the world was about to come. And the work that was done in advance of the 96 election or convention went and continued. And that whole area, the Fulton Market and Randolph Street, those areas were very troubled areas. Now they're big tourist attractions and thriving urban neighborhoods. They were a result of the work that started to host the 1996 convention in Chicago. But the 68 convention always will be a major touchstone because it was in the turbulent 60s and it was the culmination of the reaction to and the divisiveness. This is what I said many times. We talk about being divisive today. We've always been divisive. The 68 election convention in Chicago broadcast that divisiveness. It was the young anti-war hippies, if you will, against the government establishment in Grant Park, which got violent. Police, as the first Mayor Daley said, we're here to maintain law and disorder.
Oh, my God.
Which was what happened. And that footage still exists. And believe you me, if there is any hint of clashes between protesters and police in Chicago during the election, you will instantly see footage from the 1968 convention. It's a part of Chicago's history. It is a part of United States political history and social history. Not for the better, but it is there. And it does need to be confronted, and we should learn from it. Hopefully, if you see footage from the 68 convention and the way the police were treating the protesters, and I'm not trying to take sides here, but you could just look at the film and make up your own decisions. I'm not saying that the police weren't in danger, because the protesters were certainly not worried about and were not respectful of the police. There's always two sides. I understand it. But there did seem to be a lot of extreme force used, because the protesters weren't armed for the most part. But my point is, there are some very scary images of police brutality and protests being squashed. And so here we are in 2024, and there is a definite potential for something like that, given the protests that have been going around the world and nationally here concerning the Israeli-Gaza conflict with Hamas. Now, this convention already would have, you know, in Chicago, would have had some problems because of the crime. But now we're adding a potential international protest on top of that, which may stretch the police and the security measures. But aside from that, aside from these protests that may, you know, once again, we don't know what's going to happen. But my original premise here is that in their haste, I will say, to try to get a quick fix to Chicago's declining image from a business standpoint, from a tourism standpoint, from a national perception image of Chicago being the crime capital of the city or of the country, in their haste to say, how do we shift this around? How do we change this narrative? How do we get good PR? Well, we'll bring the convention here, and everybody will see what a great city Chicago is. Well, that sounds great in theory, and for a headline. But then reality sets in, and this is the analogy that I use that I think can pertain to it and make it easier to understand what I'm trying to talk about here. Chicago, in its zest and, as I said, haste to try to change its image, its declining image because of the crime problem here, they say, we're going to invite the world into our house to see us, to see how, what a, you know, to get past those images that you see on the news about crime. We want to show you what Chicago's really about. We want to show you the skyline and the lake and the diverse neighborhoods and the great food and the architecture and the Cubs and the Sox and everything that makes up Chicago. Water Tower Place, Michigan Avenue, you name it. The diversity in the neighborhoods, all those things we see on the, you know, Navy Pier, the museums, all of it. Millennium Park, Maggie Daly Park, everything. All those things. The beaches, everything. We want to show people what Chicago's really like. It's all on those tourism brochures. The Bean. Buckingham Fountain. All of it. Don't get me wrong. As I said, all those things I just mentioned. Great aspects of what make this city a major and potentially a world-class city. I say potentially because I still don't believe that. I know I've been born and raised here. I don't know if Chicago is a world-class city. Chicago is a great city filled with culture and architecture and things like that. But I've been to London. I've been to Paris. I've been to Rome. Nothing against Chicago. But I don't know if I would put Chicago in those, in that list. Nothing against it. I'm not putting it down. But Chicago isn't Rome. Chicago isn't Paris. Chicago isn't London. I'm sorry, just isn't. It's a great city. It's got a lot of great things about it, but it's not one of those cities. What can I say? Just being honest. Been to all of them. So I think I've got some kind of a of an opinion that's not just based on what I what seems to be. I've been to all of them. I've lived here. Not a knock. Just an honest appraisal. Doesn't mean Chicago's not a great place to be. I've lived here my whole life. Why would I live in a place that wasn't interesting and fun and some place to be proud of? I'm still proud to be from Chicago, but I can be honest enough to say that I don't think it's in the class of Rome or Paris or London, but that's not a knock. It's one of the great cities in this country. It's still one of the great cities in the world, but I don't know if it's the top five or the but anyway. Governor Pritzker and then Mayor Lightfoot say, well, let's go all in on this. Now, you may recall several years ago, Chicago, you know, Chicago has this second, it's not a joke. Chicago does have a second city mentality, and it has a huge chip on its shoulder. Not only, you know, from New York, which has a huge chip on its shoulder because of New York. That's within our own country. You know, Chicago does have this second city mentality. It really does. It does have a chip on its shoulder. We always have to compare our pizza to New York pizza, our hot dogs to other hot dogs, our barbecue to other barbecue and things like that, our architect. We always have to compare. Instead of just celebrating what we have, we always have to compare. Oh, our pizza is better than New York pizza. Whatever. Chicago does have a heightened image of itself. That's not bad, especially in today's world, right? We're a narcissistic society, so Chicago fits right in. But it can get you in trouble. Because sometimes when you feel you're that great, then you start to push into other areas that maybe reality shows that you're not. Right? You could say you're, you know, well, this person's a great baseball player, for instance. But then all of a sudden in high school and in college, but then they're so-called terrible in the pros. They're not bad players. But they're not as good as they thought they were. There's another level of excellence, which they don't have. And that's what can get in, that's what can be a trouble point if you have an inflated vision of yourself. You may put yourself in a position where maybe you just can't compete. That happened in Chicago several years ago, if you may recall. Chicago put itself up to host an Olympics. An Olympics, that's literally inviting the world in. I mean, for this Democratic convention, there will be world media here. There will be world cameras and world journalists here. And there will be delegates from around the country. Certainly, this is a big deal. But the Olympics is literally bringing the world to your city in every way. Physically, people, the athletes and all the people that surround the athletes, coaches and administrators and Olympic committees and everything, in addition to a saturation of worldwide media, sports media, political media, news media, major, major event to bring an Olympics to any city, especially in these days, the price tag is enormous. And the stakes are equally enormous to make sure you put on a good show because you are literally inviting the world in. And you've seen year after year, Olympic after Olympics, that cities that boast how they're going to have all these great amenities and they're going to put on the greatest Olympics in history. And we know that the Olympic selection committee has been very corrupt over the years as to how they're chosen, and there's alleged bribes given and all that. I mean, it's, well, any, as I said many times, anytime humans get involved in any kind of process, it's always corrupted. But the Olympics, wow, that's a Democratic convention, times 2 million. But Chicago was feeling kind of confident about itself several years ago. And they said, you know what? We are ready to take a step up into the next class. We are a world-class city. We're not just one of the best and biggest cities in the United States. We're one of the best and biggest cities in the world. And you know what? It's time for Chicago to host an Olympics. Hundred some years ago, Chicago was the home to many world's fairs, which brought the world in. And they were tremendous successes. And they were tremendous public relation coups for the city. The city pulled it off. The Columbian Exhibition. Many technologies of the time and innovations of the time were introduced right here in Chicago. Major events. World's fairs. No question. Sadly, 100 and some years ago, Chicago had some real visionaries. I don't mean unfortunately at the time, I mean unfortunately now. We don't have those kind of visionaries. We don't have those can-do people in charge anymore in this city. We haven't had that for decades. We had people back then like Burnham and others who had huge, huge visions. And not only did they have great visions, they were able to implement them. We don't have that anymore. We've got a lot of people talking a lot, but they can't put those words into action, sadly. We're dealing with many of the same problems for the last 50 or 60 years. So Chicago is not new to being a host to the world, a host to the country. But the Chicago of the 1890s and the Chicago of the 2020s is not the same in terms of its leadership, in its vision, and its ability to execute on a vision. But Chicago was getting a little cocky, and they wanted to host an Olympics. They wanted to host the 2016 Olympics. And so they put together and they got all the big movers and shakers and businessmen and politicians, and we are going to host an Olympics. And they put this together in like 2007, I think. This is how many years it takes. You know, they're bidding for the 2016 Olympics, and they had a massive, committees, and to put this bid together, it would talk about infrastructure and all everything. You know, I mean, when Olympic comes, this is a huge, huge undertaking. All aspects of the city have to come into play in this. Security, infrastructure, building, politics, transportation, everything. But Chicago was feeling kind of cocky. It even was the official United States then entry into the final bidding. There was a short list. And Chicago got on the short list. There was Rio de Janeiro. There was Japan. Or there was Tokyo. And there was Madrid. And there was Chicago. Madrid, Japan, Rio, Chicago. Made it to the final four. And Chicago in 2009, 7 years before the Olympics, came in fourth out of those four in their Olympic bid. Chicago expected to win it. The expectations in Chicago and around the country was Chicago is the winner. No question. Chicago's getting the Olympics. And when they announced the winning bids, they went in backward order, and Chicago was announced first, meaning they were the last of the four finalists. And the whole city, you could just feel there was a huge civic, oh, it was embarrassing, to be honest with you. And that's my point about doing something before you're ready, or knowing what you are. Now, is Chicago a lesser city than Madrid or Rio or Tokyo? No, I've been to Madrid. But was Chicago prepared and ready to host the size of this event, given the places that they were going to have the Olympics, all these different aspects, where they were going to house the athletes? It's a great idea. Chicago has the reputation, but was it ready to host this kind of event? Did it have all the amenities, all of its ducks in the row, that it could assure that there would be a successful Olympics? Well, the Olympic Committee didn't believe it, so much so that Chicago came in last of the bids. Very disappointing. Also, very embarrassing. Especially when Chicago was acting and that it was going to win. The lesson that should have been learned there was Chicago ready to do this? Did they put together a patchwork plan, or were they ready? Well, clearly they weren't ready. And that's what scares me now. Almost from 2009, what, 15 years later? Have we really learned our lesson? Because I understand the need and the want to shift Chicago's image, because there are some great things about this city that are getting lost because the crime rate nationally is what everybody's talking about, and the images are all they're getting sent. I mean, I was in London 2 years ago on 4th of July, and I went to see a concert there. And when I came home from the concert, I turned on the set. Once again, about a 6 or 7 hour difference later there. And I turned on the set, and on the BBC, it's not CNN. This is a foreign country's media service. On the BBC, the lead story was the Highland Park shooting massacre on July 4th. But the headline didn't say on the screen, it didn't say Highland Park. It said shooting massacre at a parade in Chicago, because in London, nobody knows what Highland Park is. Chicago, in bold letters. And throughout, and I, so now we were watching this. We had no idea this happened. We're watching the news before our eyes, and the pundits and the reporters on the BBC, the UK's official broadcasting system, in discussing this massacre, every one of them talked about Chicago's crime that was out of control. If you had no other exposure to Chicago, to hear a foreigner talk about Chicago, there was no talk about the bean. There was no talk about pizza. There was no talk about the lake. There was no talk about the skyline. There was no talk about the Chicago hot dog or the Chicago beef sandwich. It was Chicago is the most dangerous city in the country, and their crime rate is out of control, and this shooting massacre is yet another example of that. Whether that's fair or not doesn't matter. That is the impression, that was the impression on that day after that event of Chicago, that this wasn't an isolated incident in Chicago. This was yet another incident in the out-of-control crime that now devastates Chicago. That was that was what was being said and being reported, and even more importantly, being heard and understood by the people in the United Kingdom watching that. That's what I'm talking about in terms of images and reputations. That's what Chicago's, whether it's fair or not, because of the crime rate. I mean, here in Chicago, just last weekend, or a couple weekends ago, over the 4th of July weekend, more than 100 people were shot or injured due to violence. Over 100 in a four-day span, because it was an extended weekend over 4th of July. But that's outrageous. And that's a month and a half before we are inviting the world here to see Chicago. That's the kind of news that's coming out of Chicago. A month and a half before we're inviting the world here. And that's my point. When you sell a house, when you sell your house, right? Or you sell your car. You sell anything. You sell your bike. But let's use the house as an example, because we're basically inviting the world into Chicago's house in the next month. When you are deciding to buy your, to sell your house, most likely, unless you're just looking to get rid of it, you just want to get sell it as fast as you can, and you sell it as is. And you hope somebody buys it and then does whatever they will. They can just tear it down for all you care. You just want to sell it. But if you're looking to make a profit, if you're looking to get a good price, if you're looking to make a good impression on potential buyers, what do? You make some renovations. You paint it. You fix things that need fixing. You try to put the house in the best shape you can to make it attractive, to invite potential buyers into your house. Right? So here's Chicago inviting potential buyers into its house for the 24 Democratic Convention. And by the buyers, in this case, the buyers are businesses who might want to invest. The buyers are politicians who look around to see how well the city is being run. And buyers are tourists who come to Chicago to spend their money, to visit here and tell their friends, we had a great time in Chicago, you should go there. So if you're going to invite And now there's going to be international intrigue. So I told you already about at least one perception of what Chicago is internationally with its crime. That's a hard nut to crack. And those people are going to be coming over with those impressions of Chicago. Oh, I hope I'm safe there. Even the reporters. Well, we're hearing about all this crime in Chicago. Maybe we'll take a round and go to some of these high crime neighborhoods and see what's going on there. I've been hearing about it for the last several years from across the Atlantic, but let me take a look and see what it really is. Well, right now, a month and a half before, they could see that the crime rate is perhaps worse than ever, with 100 shootings and injuries over 4th of July. If I was a reporter from a foreign country, that's certainly one of the stories I would come to Chicago at. I'm there to report on the convention, but I would also report on the crime in Chicago. It's got to be on their list, no question about it. And the 4th of July weekend murder and crime statistics are only going to support that. So this is my point. I get it. I get why Pritzker and at the time Lori Lightfoot wanted to bring people to Chicago to combat these perceptions of Chicago. But you can't invite the world into your house unless you first fixed it up, until you first did some renovations and fixed some of your problem things so that you present the best possible product, like when you fix up your house. We're having an open house here in Chicago for 4 days for the world. But I don't think we're ready to invite those people in. We haven't made the necessary renovations and changes to put our best foot forward. We just had a horrible crime-filled weekend here a month before. So my fear is we're going to be inviting the world into our house when we're not ready. I think that the leaders jumped the gun. And now, as I said, not only were the police going to be stretched with providing security because of the high crime rates, and crime doesn't take a vacation, especially in August. It's the summer months that are the most crime-filled because people are out and about. This convention was going to be a test for the Chicago as well as the national security, but certainly the Chicago police, without the protesters about Gaza. So now we're going to add that on to already a potentially unstable security system with the high crime rate here that explodes, especially in the summer. And you're bringing the world here in the heart of the summer in August. Is it a bad idea to want to host a convention? No. But you do it when you're ready to do it. And there is no way when Chicago bid for that convention a couple of years ago and finally got it just a year ago, that you could possibly think by any stretch of the imagination that you would have your crime rate down to the point where you could put your best foot forward without worrying about it. But they were hasty. They don't want to wait. Governor Pritzker may have his own presidential sights for 2028. So he wants to put his best foot forward now as the host of the Democratic Party in 2024 so that perhaps he become a leading candidate in 2028. There's a lot of motivations going here, but what was... overlooked was, is Chicago ready to host this kind of event? We've already saw how embarrassing it was when Chicago tried to bid for the Olympics and came in last of all the final bids. Chicago wasn't ready to put itself on that world stage to host the Olympics.
But 15 years later, I don't think we've learned any lessons, because I think that we are inviting people into our house, and I don't think we're ready to invite them in to put our best foot forward. We've got a stretched, demoralized police force as it is. That's only going to be exacerbated by the protests, which are going to add many more people into the mix, where there will need to be police presence and protection, in addition to making sure that no big crime sprees goes out between August 19th and the 22nd, because that will be the front page news, not only in Chicago, not only in the country, but around the world, because the media from around the world will be here reporting on the crime of Chicago. And God forbid that there is any kind of a protest in Grant Park that gets violent, then all bets are off. Because as I said before, then the footage from 1968 comes back, and whatever image enhancement that you hoped that this convention would bring will set you back 10 years. And you say, wow, Jim, I mean, that's really negative thinking. Well, it depends on how you look at it. It's either negative thinking or it's realistic thinking. What did I just say does not have a 50-50 or even a 70-30 or even an 80-20 chance of happening? The odds are that the scenario that I just laid out has every intention of happening. It's not 20-80 against it. It's 80-20 for it. It's not that Chicago can't be the host of it, but do you want to do it now while you're still in the midst of trying to work out these problems? And you, at this point, now don't forget, now then Lori Lightfoot, who's thought that, you know, she was looking for any kind of boost to boost her failed tenure as mayor. So, whoa, look at this. Look at how great Chicago is. We won the convention. Look at me. I'm the mayor. Blah, blah, blah. Well, that did her a lot of good. Between getting the horrible NASCAR debacle here, which has proved to be nothing except a lot of pain in the butt for people traveling in Chicago over in July, when everybody's out and about going downtown to the lake, you pretty much close every road for a week and a half for very little good PR and very little money overflow you were supposed to get from all the tourism, which never showed up. But now you're inviting literally the world in, and she's gone. She was, and so now, you know, Governor or Mayor Johnson inherits this. It's on the books. He can't say no to it. Lori Lightfoot said yes to it, and she's not here to see it through. So now it falls in his lap. And he's in the running already after just over a year of being one of the worst mayors in the history of the city, who has no control over the crime problem happening here. He's looking at long-term solutions. Meanwhile, the crime rates and the murder rates are going up. I hope that this scenario that I'm creating turns out to be a bunch of hogwash. I hope every scenario that I just brought up to you never sees the light of day. I do hope that Chicago puts a great foot forward and it's a very successful convention, and people walk away from this convention with a new appreciation and a better understanding of the city, and something that they will take away from them and go to tell their friends and family and help rehabilitate Chicago's current reputation. I hope that is what happened. That's the hope of Governor Pritzker and everybody that wanted to bring this convention here. The only problem is that damn thing called reality. Because I don't know if Chicago has made and could have made the necessary renovations to its house in order to invite people in and to show its best foot forward.
We might be getting there, but we're not there.
And so the lesson here is, for Chicago, which didn't learn its lesson after the Olympics, and the lesson for all of us is, there's nothing wrong with optimism. There's nothing wrong with dreaming. But you have to be realistic in, can we do this? Now, I know you say, well, Jim, if we would have done that, we never would have went to the moon. I understand the need for sometimes blind faith. But don't forget, some of our earliest flights up to the moon ended in deaths and disasters. There were, believe me, those people at Mission Control, when Neil Armstrong was putting his foot on the moon, they were sitting there with their glasses and their white shirts and their ties behind all those screens in Mission Control. And as much as they looked like they were in control, they were all crossing their fingers. I understand audacity. I understand the need to be fearless and strive and to be optimistic. I get it. You can't achieve without that kind of ambition. I understand that. But you also have to look at reality, and you also have to look at the detriments of what happens if you don't get it. Does it actually then work 100% against what you were going for? I don't know if Chicago is ready to invite the world into an open house to sell itself to some buyers coming in from all over the world. I hope it is. And just like those guys at Mission Control, when Apollo 8 landed, I'm going to be crossing my fingers. Oh, no, wait, it wasn't Apollo. It was Apollo 11, right? Let me make sure. Yeah, it was Apollo 11 that landed, right? Yeah. Whatever Apollo it was. Yeah, it was Apollo 11, I'm sorry. Apollo 11 landed. When Neil Armstrong took his step on the moon, as I said, while they were confident and while they were watching those screens, they were also keeping their fingers crossed. So on August 19th through the 22nd, while the Democratic Convention is being held here in Chicago, while Chicago welcomes the country and welcomes the world and opens its house, I'm just going to be keeping my fingers crossed. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 425. I'm Jim Tirano, and here on business, I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears.